This is the Nomad Futurist Podcast, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and transformation. Connect with us, share your thoughts with us at nomadfuturist.com. Let's get this started. Here are Phil and Nabil.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Nomad Futurist. This is your co-host, Nabil Mahmood, currently from Scottsdale, Arizona.
And this is your co-host, Philip Cobbins from Montclair, New Jersey.
And hi, this is Jamie Scott-Okataya, CEO of JSA, logging in here from Las Vegas.
Jamie, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been way overdue. I would say roughly we are off the mark by about 4 years, give or take. You should have been the first one on this show. Well, you finally made it. Thank you again. So let's get to know you a little bit. Could you share at a very high level with our audience, what do you do?
Sure. It's such an honor to be here with you, gentlemen. I've been watching your podcast, your whole program, your dedication, your mission grow over these many years. And thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. From a what do I do perspective, almost 20 years, January 1 will be 20 years, two decades, that I founded JSA, Jamie Scotto and Associates. It's a public relations, marketing, event planning, brand positioning company that is headquartered in fabulous Vegas, but really all across North America. And we've got a little spattering now in Europe and Asia. And we are 100% dedicated to this incredible digital infrastructure space. So our clients are incredible people who are doing big things, building out networks, connecting them into amazing data centers. And we're all sort of guided by core mission, core values to really build this network for global communications, empowering economies, governments, communities to be better, to perform better, but in a sustainable manner as well. So yeah, we are committed to our industry, our JSA family, our clients, but also to the planet.
Well, we're going to get into that in just a bit. Sustainability is close to us and the future is something that we are trying to address in some capacity. Before we get into that a bit, and you know, looking at your background, you are a creative writing major and you've got a BA in English. How the heck does one get from an arts degree and language into the technology sector?
I love the path, actually. I think when I was getting my master's in writing, I was thinking, how on earth am I actually going to make money with this degree? And then I found myself working at MSNBC. It was a 24/7 news channel, similar to a CNN, Fox News for our global audience. And that was insane, incredible. I learned what it means to be a journalist, what it means to take a story, make it newsworthy, made some great connections there. But after 9/11, after war in Afghanistan, after some major crazy news headlines, I realized, wow, this is running me dry. And you're calling me in the middle of the night and I'm working these long shifts. I really want to start working on the business side. I want to hop over and help companies who really have a great story be heard and recognized by the journalists and analysts. So I wanted to hop over to PR. So I started doing a little work for friends, building up a portfolio, and then I got interviewed by Telex, one of the few companies that were interviewing me at the time. And I met this amazing gentleman there, the CEO and chairman of Telex at the time, founder of Telex, Rory Cutaia. And of course, I'm a journalist, so I came with my own questions and I sat down and I said, all right, what's your 3-year plan? And by the way, the CEO that I'd interviewed previously were all like, oh, is a question that kind of stopped them. This man had a whole pile, I don't know, it could have been blank pages for all I know at the time, but he's like, actually, this is my 10-year plan. And I was like, oh, this man's impressive. I say this story because fast forward, I became the head of marketing and PR for Telex, which started my industry journey. And the Meet Me Room there at 60 Hudson Street brought me actually to know Phil here, but also so many amazing people that I feel like we've just all grown up together. That New York posse of ours was pretty strong, but it also brought in so many global connections too, not just the physical kind, but the relationships, the people who are together. We're building, again, this global network. So fast forward, I realized that there was a need for a PR marketing agency in of by our industry. I had already retained one. One was already on retainer when I got to Telex. And so I finally got them on the phone. It was this big PR firm, Madison Avenue office, like global PR. And finally, they took my phone call and the lady goes, yeah, my other clients are Cheerios and Colgate. And I was like, okay, well, what are you saying about telex? Like, who have you talked to? New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Queen's Business? What have they said in response? Are they covering us? She goes, Jamie, I've got to be honest with you. No one cares about collocation. And that's what she thought.
That's so New Yorker.
And that was before you knew what collocation was.
And I was like, and so I fired her like on the spot because I was like, oh, no. I want people with passion. I want people who know this better than I do. We're talking to these key influencers of ours. Like, what? I'm going to spend a good chunk of my marketing budget on this type of, like, so basically.
I can feel our audience now trying to research who the head of PR for Cheerios was back in
2003.
I can't too many details. I think I just, no names. That person I'm sure is lovely and that company is great if you're like into
cereal.
Right? Yeah, go with that. But they did have that mentality that you can sell anything, right? And I don't believe that. I believe that our industry, it's about relationships. It's about growing together. I think you have to have a passion for it. You have to understand what it means locally and globally. And so I feel very blessed that I was put into such a beautiful place. Like the Meet Me Room at 60 Hudson in New York City at a time when co-location was becoming a thing. We were drilling holes and connecting servers.
As someone that still spends a lot of time in Meet Me Rooms at 60 Hudson Street, they're not as pretty anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So you almost remind me of the Steve Jobs story when he hired John Sculley if he was going to continue to sell sugar.
Yeah.
That's Pepsi. Anyhow, so a question for you. That's a major move from being a producer at MSNBC to being a part of the data infrastructure space. I mean, were you looking at other verticals, other sectors, or this was something that just hit as an interesting sector to be involved in?
Yeah, great question. I was looking for companies that had good stories. And so it was a range. I was a lot like that PR firm once upon a time where I was like, anything with a good story and good people. And I remember going to the Telex website at the first time as researching before the interview, going, interconnection, what do they mean by this? And that's such a crazy word. Like, don't we all need some sort of interconnection? And how can you own interconnection? What does this mean? And I think that was one of my first questions, actually, to the CEO during my interview. And now it's such an incredible part of almost my identity, personally and professionally. I think the world needs to be interconnected and we need to share positivity and goodness. And like, there's so much darkness out there that if you can shine your own light and then share the power of that light with others to make it a really meaningful, impactful light that is able to sort of beat the darkness, that is, well, worth your livelihood, your what you're doing here on this planet. So yeah, I'm glad that we can do this physically through connections of networks and data centers and businesses. But I'm also glad that we can do it spiritually and emotionally in our homes.
I feel like I've known you for most of those 2 decades. So it sounds like you sought out Telex because you were looking for an industry to do PR. Were there other industries that you were looking at the time? Was it like Telex or Rice Krispies or
Cheerios?
Yeah, it was like the happening like techie companies that were just starting to be birthed in New York City at the time. And that was pretty cool. But none of them stood out to me as much as Telex. So I remember thinking, if this guy calls me back, now this is a really exciting interview. Most of the other inspiring tech companies, they were all part of YEO at the time, which is how my resume got out there. And I all of a sudden wasn't monster.com, which was like the pit that you just throw your resume in. And this is, again, dating ourselves, but you remember that time. But YEO had shared my resume. And so all of a sudden, my phone, which was not ringing at all, got a bunch of calls. And they were young entrepreneurs who had these companies that they thought were the next big thing. And so I sat in some pretty dodgy like office spaces. I remember thinking, this is where you're coming to meet and like be inspired. What is going on? And then you go to Telex at the time, which was State Street. You remember this?
17th State. Yeah.
17th State. And the beautiful office space, full view. You had like Statue of Liberty, I think. Like it was breathtaking. Southern tip of Manhattan. and the ferries going by. I used to take the ferry into work because I lived in Hoboken, which was a beautiful way to commute, I thought. But anyway, so the whole point of it is like I could have fallen into any industry, really, but I did find the Telex story and the people inspiring.
Did you always have a passion for technology in general? Were your parents in technology space? Were they in the PR space? Give us a sense of your upbringing. Do you have siblings? Are they also in similar spaces?
Yeah. No, I always just loved to learn about a little bit of everything. That's what inspired me to go into journalism, because one day I'm talking finance news and we're doing CNBC hits. And then the other days we're talking about what did she wear on the red carpet? Like, I like the idea of just sort of knowing a little bit about everything and finding the story there and what grabs people's attention. So being creative, I think my brain just wants to know a little bit about everything. But my family, my mom had the same job for 40 years. So right after school at 18, she didn't have a choice in college. That wasn't a thing when she started working. And she had to put my father through his college. So she was a medical secretary. So the doctors would diagnose on little tapes and she would turn them into actual records. She ended up growing and becoming like, not because she was schooled, but she figured it out. She ended up running the whole department and organizing the hospital at the time in a bit better manner. So she's brilliant in her own right. But she never had the opportunity that I had to go to college. It was really like exciting. I was the first person in my family on both sides to earn a degree, not to mention go on to master's. And now my cousins are all rocking and rolling. And so I can't,
you paved the way. You paved the way.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then
did you grow up in New York?
No, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
Tiny state. Yeah, most people like born, raised, that's where they have their families. That's the same church their whole lives type of thing. So, and everyone was very, like, it's Italian-American little neighborhood that I was raised in. So I remember like my anthropology teacher teaching us like, not everyone is Italian and Catholic. Like, what?
There's a world outside.
Why do those
here?
People not have vowels at the end of their names? They're so weird.
I don't know. Very good. But my full last name, Scotto, my maiden name is Scotto De Santolo. So like something like 15 letters. I don't know. I haven't counted in a long time. But I remember filling out the SATs and everyone like, we're waiting for Jamie to finish. I'm like, wait, a few more vowels. A few more vowels.
Very good. All right. So after Telex, which you were roughly there for a couple of years, you decided to go on your own.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean,
a sale, one of its first at the time. And so they were like, shh. We won't do PR. We'll quiet down. We won't spend that much money. We want to make our books good. And so I thought it was a great time. Well, for a couple of reasons. One was I had met so many other companies like Hibernia or a few others that I knew I could do what I did for Telex for them. And so, and again, friends, right? Trying to start their own businesses. So there was interest in Telex. I think it was like a 4-month term where I'd built up a whole department by then. So I was leaving them in good hands and good shape and winding it down. And I still did their CBX at the time, their customer business exchange for them for that year as one of my first projects for JSA. So we left in good form. And then personally, I started having a crush on the CEO.
I noticed some similarities in his name.
Wait a second. What did I miss over here?
Yeah.
No, I'll just tell the
okay. This is the breaking news, everyone. Breaking news.
Breaking
news. All right. Do tell.
Well, and then here I am. I'm a professional woman. I've spent a lot of time, money, energy into my career, and I didn't want to be that girl, right? So I thought, well, and when I started Telex, I was engaged, and he was going through a divorce that took a while and wanted to be respectful of that, too. So it wasn't even a thing when we first met and worked together. But when I started JSA, all of a sudden, he invited me for an afternoon lunch. And so I brought my notebook thinking like, oh, maybe there's another JSA opportunity here. And then we're ordering wine, and I'm like, what is this? What is this? But that was the first date of now my husband and the father of my daughter, Rory Kataya. So yeah, I've always been impressed with him. And we were friends first, but it absolutely turned out over time.
Were you not in that 10-year plan?
Right.
That was a 20-year plan.
That's Rory, you're a genius.
It's a fortune teller.
Hey, it's got to be interesting to have that, like, look back on it and see like what you were going through, like, having, even forgetting about the professional journey, even the personal journey, how things evolve And in a fairly short span of time, like everything changes. And this random company that you researched somehow led, like we talk about happenstance on this podcast constantly. And your story is like the textbook definition of you take a chance and that informs another chance and nothing is written in stone. There is no such thing. There might be a such a thing as destiny, but it's certainly not what you think it's going to be.
So that is so true. It's almost a little Hallmarky, I know, but it's like he was in NYU there. He could have, he might not have. My resume came across his screen and he was like, hey, let's get her in. We need to fill this spot in our executive team. And then I say, well, yeah, let me research this company. Let me take this interview. And I show up with my questions. And as I'm talking with this man and he's inspiring me, like, who would have thought that? Fast forward 20 years later, we now have a little girl.
It's crazy. You know? It's crazy.
And that's the future of the data center.
You could find your future lives.
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right. So you leave them, you start your endeavor with JSA. Where did you get the entrepreneurial juices and that level of excitement to say, okay, I've done this for others and I'm willing to take the risk, yet I do not know all the ins and outs of the space. And at that point in time, this was a sector that was actually still in a formation stage, right? We were still not sure if technology was going to end up being muscle memory and use daily. Nobody knew where that was going to go. So how did you end up taking that massive risk to get into a space that we didn't really know what the future was going to be like?
I think I was supported by a community of entrepreneurs. So I felt much more protected, I think, than if I had this idea all by myself and I was all alone in the world type of thing. Again, and if you actually look at all the folks, the names of us at the time at Telex, like Todd Raymond, Rory Kataya, Hunter Newby, we all went on to start our own companies after that and our own careers and help each other along the way. And so I just felt like I was in the right place at the right time. And we all had our own things that we've learned and we're passionate about. And we all sort of, again, leaned on each other to move forward and carve our own niche in a very exciting industry where we literally punched a hole in a wall and it exploded into the idea of a meet me room like that. And it was the first time it was done. I'm sure you've heard Hunter talk about it. So I won't repeat that.
I was on a call with Hunter yesterday and talked about it.
And we talked about it.
But to this day, I'm still old school, right? So I'm still like, all right, I have to get from one place to another. I think the easiest route is to Shawshank it, like put up a poster and just start like spooning out the wall pieces and run it through. It's the same
that's
idea.
That's what we did. There were so many local loops in this one building. You would have spent, we literally found Hunter. Rory tells at the time, like he was wandering the halls trying to get his local loops resolved.
He was a hair model. Wandering the halls.
We're like, you'd be good in sales.
So, Jamie, you talked about sustainability earlier as well, and you guys came up with the Green Data Center book. Could you tell us what was the driving force behind that?
I had a little baby girl and the pandemic, right? So she's a pandemic baby on top of it all. Actually, Rory and I got certified to deliver this baby if we had to all alone. We delivered her. This is not the story that you
Rory have. Got certified.
No, you could have thrown baby. My God.
Gave birth to her in a bath in our house because at the time they weren't letting dads in to the hospitals and these women were delivering all by themselves. And I'm like, just keep replaying this and it's not the baby story I really want. Like to be worried about my Sicilian, Italian, American husband beating down security to go be with his family. Like I just don't want to think about that. So we actually did it at home and she was this miracle baby for us. And finally I get her and she's in my arms. I'm looking down and I'm like, it became very real that this is our time to protect her and to give her what was given to us from our parents and our parents' generations, like a sustainable earth to be able to be blessed to move forward and have that opportunity, right? And at the time, there was a really crazy prediction that I read that currently the draw of data centers and data networks was 3 to 4% global energy consumption And that was a lot of emissions. And I felt very responsible. This was our industry. This was our friends that we've grown up with. And I never thought about sustainability in such a like home-hitting way. And that they predicted by 2030 would grow to 8-10% for data center emissions alone to be part of that global energy consumption. And I just felt like, wow, that's on our watch. This is...
And even that's understated a little bit, given like the explosion with AI and all this.
AI wasn't a thing when this prediction was made. And so I'm looking down at this baby and this numbers are just going through my brain. And I'm like, I don't know how to solve for it. But one thing I do know is I know I have a network of very smart people, these technologists who can really solve for this together if we can all work together. And so I'd be on calls with data centers in Finland, data centers in Utah, data centers in South America. And I'm hearing what they're doing to get more sustainable in their own little neck of the woods. But I'd say, well, is this time for a press release? Like, we should announce this. This is amazing. And they're like, oh, no. We're just texting. It's not legal. We'd have our necks. No. And so one night, November 21, I was like, okay, we need to put this out there. Like, we need to start looking at ourselves as global citizens. And so I, through LinkedIn, and I was like, would you guys say yes if I asked you to write a chapter in a book we'll call Greener Data, but your story of what you're doing in your neck of the woods to get a little bit more sustainable on your data networks and data centers? And I got an amazing response. We had 24 authors in that first book, which was super humbling. Again, global folks from all over the world, all different parts of our ecosystem as well. And it was incredible. On April 2022, we launched the book on Amazon. It became an Amazon best-selling book, which was, again, humbling. But we leveraged each other's network. So I promoted it. Dee Nelson promoted it.
Nelson promoted something? I don't believe it. I love myself.
He wrote the chapter, Phil. He's got to promote that.
Right. No, we love.
of course.
Look, it's clearly something people were clamoring for, no doubt. And what you were able to do with the book, which is something we have tried to do as in terms of bringing our industry together as it relates to education, is the essentially open sourcing what they're doing. Like, it shouldn't be a secret because we all have this responsibility to do it. And us as an industry, not just because of the amount of power that we leverage as an industry, mostly as a consequence for all of the people out there that are going to blame us for it, of everyone searching TikTok and Instagram constantly, just put down your phones and maybe we wouldn't be growing at such a rapid pace. Not that I'm complaining, I'm just suggesting. But because there is actually a bottom line benefit to us being efficient, because we're not going to be able to, you know, it's a huge element of our cost. So we happen to be one of the few industries, and we mention this from time to time, that we overlay, it's good. You want to be judicious citizens of the planet, but also it happens to benefit us financially and in the way we're able to leverage our facilities. And I think your book is the de facto kind of open sourcing of those strategies that I don't think is appreciated much.
And it also became multiple voices, not just one, right? Multiple perspectives, 24 different chapters, all on like, what are we doing as an industry to fight against this? Because I think we started getting a bad reputation. Oh, there's such huge energy consumers. There's going to be a data center in my neck of the woods. I don't want that. Let me go protest. So we started hearing a lot about like a bad PR for data centers. And so what this book started becoming was like, no. We are actively working together globally as technologists, as innovators, to bring this to hopefully sub-zero for net emissions. So that was another thing that I didn't predict, but was so humbled by. And then we created greenerdata.net, which was a website to host any type of latest blogs, white papers, anything that anyone's putting out there. Like, it's the part about the book is once you print it, it's a time capsule, right? And it starts to get old, like a car, you're driving out of the car lot, you're right. Like, ooh, I just took a turn and lost $3,000.
And it no longer smells like a new car.
It's losing value as soon as it leaves the lot.
And like, so same thing with the book. It's like started getting old. So we created greenerdata.net to be a more current voice for the industry, a gathering of voices, I should say. We also, for PTC last year, I got a lot of technologists coming over and saying, I can get with this new product or service, I can get your data centers greener. I was like, I don't want to be the barrier if it's true, but I also don't know and don't have a way to test this. And so I created sort of like a Yelp directory type of thing, like put all the companies who
like a green marketplace.
Yeah. Go there. If someone's using it, you can do a 5-star review or 1-star review, whatever you want. But it's out there because I want to be a conduit. I don't want to interrupt any flow of information, but I also, I don't have the ability to vouch for you myself. So there's a greener data directory out there. If you are in the business of sustainability and you can help our industry, go put up your profile. We'll check you out. But also, we're working on volume 2 now.
Oh my gosh, it's coming.
I guess, Phil, you and I missed that invite again. Volume 3.
We're in volume 3, I guess.
We are the cover of volume 3.
That's right. Yeah, we're planning like every 2 years, to be honest, just because that's about the time. Well, it takes a good year to write and edit. This bad boy is going to be 500 pages now and includes 47 authors. So we're like doubled the book, basically. And we got creative in ways to do that too. Sort of cornerstone chapter books to introduce a section like measurement. And then there's 4 of these. So we organized the book a little bit more and we got some great thought leaders weighing in on just the cornerstone chapter. Like that was a compilation of 5 or 6 authors too. So for those who didn't have, like maybe you guys might not have the time to write 3,000 words and be a full chapter, there's still ways to lend your voice. So, and we had a phenomenal analyst to help us here too, Mary Allen. So it's amazing how once you like establish like, hey, I'd like to do this, this is what I love about our industry. People are like, I can help. And you're like, yeah, thank you.
All you need to do is give them the opportunity. I think we're seeing it, right? What we're doing with the foundation is like, everybody wants the help. We're selling cute kittens. You're selling cute kittens also. There's nobody that will say, no, making energy consumption greener is not important. Just like educating the population, whether it's because we're trying to get the next generation of employees to come in and look at digital infrastructure as a potential career path, or just educating people on the technology that they're becoming increasingly beholden to, which also has the impact of maybe not being scared of these data centers coming into your backyard because they're actually helping modernize the local economies, et cetera.
And it's all about education, both getting the younger workforce to lend their talents to us, as well as sustainability. And I read a stat by Gartner the other day that I thought of you guys, because this is apparently the first year in our industry where the gens and millennials outnumber the boomers. So now we're at that tipping point. Now we really need to understand key educational communication strategies, like what's motivating them? How do we talk to them? Like, where are they to even approach them and touch them and get them excited about our infrastructure industry? So this is the time when podcasts like this are so much more relevant too. They're not out there getting an email about us, right? But they're certainly out there listening to podcasts. What are we even saying about our industry to that Google would pull this information up and be relevant to them? So this is all so critical time. We have a new passing of the baton, us boomers. And
are you putting yourself in the boomer category? You're not a boomer. You're married to a boomer, but you're not a boomer.
I'm married to a boomer.
There you go. But we'll make sure that we provide all the relevant information as far as Jamie's books and the website are concerned over here. Jamie, what's next for you? What are you looking at? What's the next big thing in JSA world?
Keep on keeping on. We just acquired an agency, which were really our first acquisition, which we are so, so honored and excited about, and added another dozen or so team members and a dozen or so new logos to our board. And we are strategically thinking more M&A in the next 10-year plan. I like those.
There is a 10-year plan.
No, the 10-year plan. Yeah.
I find them very attractive.
Is Rory there? Can we ask Rory if he's got a blank set of papers that account for the next 10 years?
He's not here right now. He's at his work. But yeah, I'm gonna go ask him. That'll be
Phil, that conversation's gotta be in person. I wanna see what's on that piece of paper.
Right.
So Jamie, you've got a little girl. She is a data center girl. Having gone through this cycle and setting up your own business and getting technical and doing all the good that you're doing currently, and having her in mind, particularly with your sustainability initiative, what would you do differently, or what would you tell the little Jamie if it was today?
I think Ava needs to find her passion and lead by passion with her heart, not just her mind, and know that whatever she chooses to do, that she has a community to support her. That's what gave me confidence when I was in my 20s and wandering the streets of New York City and meeting folks like Philip. But I'm trying to impart that in her, let her know that it does take a village, but she has that village. And whatever her mind can think of, there will be folks like us saying, yes, we believe we'll help you. And I think that's so empowering. My mother used to write my notes to me when she'd send me cookies to Tufts, my undergrad. She used to end every letter with, you are not alone. And I think that's really powerful, especially these days when maybe media and war and craziness tries to separate us. We are not alone. And there's more sameness in each of us than things that push us apart from one another. And we have to remember it's humankind. We're in this together and there's one earth. And talk about ultimate inclusivity, right? We're all inhabitants of earth. And therefore we all share the desire, the need to allow our legacies to thrive.
My gosh, so well said. I'm speechless, really.
Luckily for you, I am never speechless. So, you know, I think, and I know we're trying to bring this thing to a close, but what strikes me about this kind of digital world we're living in is that you think that just by definition, it's brought us more together, right? Because we're able to connect to people around the world instantaneously. We're able to do a call like this where we're talking to each other. Maybe it's in 2D and not 4D, but that's probably for everyone's benefit. So I'm not spitting all over the place. But at the end of the day, it also, especially since the pandemic, since people are more comfortable working from home, has isolated us a bit. It used to be you go to the office and you see other people. And that kind of camaraderie is something that is going to be more and more difficult for this new generation of people coming in to experience. And it can be isolating. And I think you mentioned YEO over and over again as kind of the cornerstone. I don't think people kind of realize that joining those organizations, joining those groups, finding that community in our current world is super important, because not everyone has a mother that says you are not alone, because they don't really understand that concept. That is incredible insight in just a bumper sticker, maybe even less, a fortune cookie. And I think that the more we can find ways to engage community, we had talked about, like, part of the Nomad Futures Foundation initiative is we're bringing students to all of these different events and we're trying to just expose them. And we want to create like a singular Slack channel where they all can just communicate with one another, not Twitter where it becomes crazy, but people that have that kind of this shared desire to grow and raise each other up. And I think you summed it up really well. But I think if we don't highlight the isolating elements of what the evolution of technology has done, we're not going to effectively recognize how important it is to focus on community.
That's right.
Well, yeah, I love the message, we are not alone. Oh, you're not alone.
Yeah.
All right.
You're not alone sounds like aliens.
I know.
Exactly.
You're not alone.
So Jamie, you said this a couple of times. You say idea. Where does that come from? It's not really Rhode Island or New York. Very English of you. Where does that come from?
Idea is kind of, it has a Connecticut kind of spin to it. I know people that say have like R's at the end of idea.
And I did live in Norwich for a year.
Oh. So,
Yeah, during my third year at Tufts, there was a big push for juniors to travel abroad. And so I made it a home for a year and I went to University of East Anglia and studied English. Thought it was a good place to study English. Turned out it was.
Well, it turned out to be good.
They claim to have invented it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Go on, Phil. All right. So what are your parting thoughts? What would you tell the young generation what to look for? What should they do besides the village being there to support them?
Let your brain be creative. We're going to pass you a baton and try to impart on whatever we've learned in the past few decades as we had our hands on the wheel. But the truth is that your challenges are going to be very unique for the future. And so, yes, bring in the past, learn from our mistakes so you don't need to repeat them, but also add your own creativity, your own technology and innovation, because we need new solutions for the new challenges ahead. And so that is your, just as it was ours in the last few decades. I'm really excited. I think there are technologies out there, such as AI, that when harnessed right and for good, it can really drive us further. But we always need to have that human creativity overlay, the control in place. And so again, there's the future is wild and crazy and the Wild West. But I think our children will be uniquely qualified. I have to hope.
Absolutely. Very good. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. This has been absolutely phenomenal. Great to get to know you more. And we will be sharing the links for the book and the other platforms that Jamie has actually built. So thank you again.
Ladies and gentlemen, lovely to see you. Jamie Scotto. I just can't believe it.
This has been great. Nothing lasts forever. Markets will come back. Currencies will rebound. Businesses will go on. And we will all move on. That could happen next week, next month, or next year. At Nomad Futurists, we are confident that those who prepare rather than panic will come out of this stronger. Thank you for joining us. This has been brought to you by Nomad Futurist. Check us online at nomadfuturist.org. And thank you for listening and subscribing, as well as your continued support.